What is going on, sports fans? Welcome in to another edition of the Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Lots to talk about on today's show. We will jump right into it with SEC Media Days currently happening in Dallas, taking a look back at some things from day two yesterday that caught my attention. One of the things I said I wanted to hear about from Brent Venables was, you know, that transition of Oklahoma's making of coming from the Big 12 into the SEC and really kind of how that would adjust for them. And he addressed that sort of. I did remind people that he does have coaching experience against or in the SEC as a defensive coordinator there with Clemson and some of the other places he's been to. He's coached against Auburn, LSU, Alabama, Texas A&M. He was a coach at LSU, so he's got experience being a part of an SEC program and knowing what it takes to be successful in the SEC. So Brent Venables reminding people that, hey, just because we're the new kids on the block, don't count us out just yet. I know what to do. I know what it takes in the SEC to be successful. So that's kind of what I was looking to hear from them yesterday, of kind of how he was expecting that transition to go. I think Dan Lanning with Oregon and the transition they're making from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten, I think he kind of went a little bit more into detail with X's and O's than what Brent Venables might have. Brent was just kind of like, you know, hey, I've got the experience. I know what it takes inside this conference to be successful. And obviously his resume speaks for itself. He most definitely does. But I would have liked to have heard a little bit more kind of along the lines of what Dan Lanning was talking about as far as how Oregon is handling. Like you saw during their spring practices, they were a lot more physical, had a lot more tackling drills, really put an emphasis on being more physical, physically, offensively, and defensively. So I really do think that Dan Lanning kind of did a better job of showing what his team is doing for this transition, but I don't think Brent Venables necessarily needs to show. We'll find out August 31st. When they strap it up and they get out there and they're playing between the wide lines and it actually matters, we'll be able to see what they did to be ready. And it's not to say that Oklahoma is nowhere close to being an SEC caliber team. They are most definitely talent-wise, facility-wise, fan base-wise, absolutely 110% built to be in the SEC. So it's going to be good, and definitely looking forward to seeing what the Sooners can bring to the table. They're kind of sitting there in that second tier, I think. I think right now you're looking at the top tier. Everybody's looking at Georgia, Texas. Those are kind of the top two teams heading into the season. But I think Oklahoma, Alabama, those type teams kind of right behind them there in that second tier. So good luck to Brent Venables in Oklahoma as they get set to have their first season as a member of the Southeastern Conference. Should be good. Missouri also was a part of Media Days on day two. Eli Drinkwitz came to the podium. Not the podium. He was actually on Paul Feinbaum's show yesterday afternoon. And first and foremost, the chemistry that he and Paul have. Like, if Eli Drinkwitz does not, like, if coaching doesn't work out for him, if Missouri ends up firing him, please get that man on the SEC network, right? The dude is entertaining. He's a lot of fun to listen to in an interview. I haven't had the pleasure of interviewing him, but hopefully sometime, you know, soon that can change. And I'm sure he's probably a delight to interview and has all kinds of great stories. But he was talking about it with Paul Feinbaum. He's talking about the season last year and how they went 11-2 and they ended up beating Ohio State 14-3 in the Cotton Bowl. They finished the season ranked in the top 10, but he was really kind of crediting one moment early in the season as kind of that defining moment for this team and what they would expect moving forward. And that was actually Harrison Mavis's 61-yard field goal to beat Kansas State early in the season last year. That 61-yard field goal he hit to win that game, that was kind of that turning point, he said. That was really kind of where this team had that faith and that belief. Not that they didn't have any faith and belief in themselves before, but when that happened, they were like, you know what? We got this. It's that clicking moment, right? And he talked about that. He's like, you know, every program when you start to kind of turn the tables and move forward, you have that clicking moment where everything, where one thing happens and then everything just falls into place after that. And he said that 61-yard field goal last year was definitely that that congealing moment for the team. And again, like I said, they go on to win 11 games last year. They're expected to be one of the top teams in the SEC this year. They're expected to be a team that's in the conversation for the college football playoffs this year. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what Missouri brings to the table. Obviously, whenever you can return a quarterback from the season before, like Brady Cook, actually the last couple of seasons, it's definitely going to help you. And speaking of quarterbacks, Missouri's quarterback, Brady Cook, he was speaking to the media yesterday, and he's got one game in particular circled, and that is that game against Auburn. He's holding a little bit of a grudge against that. Obviously, Auburn beat them in Jordan-Hare in 2022. And ever since then, Brady Cook has not been able to get that game out of his head. He said that's the game he has circled. So Missouri looks like they're poised, ready to go. Eli Drinkwitz just seems he looks like a deacon at a Baptist church in the South, or he looks like the manager at a local credit union, right? And he's one of the most chill guys, but that guy knows how to coach a football team. Right? I mean, you know who Eli Drinkwitz kind of reminds me of a little bit? And it's a show I've started recently watching back. He reminds me a little bit of Eric Taylor from Friday Night Lights, right? Like the TV show. I think he's just got that calm demeanor, just cooler than the flip side of the pillow, but he knows ball. He knows how to coach up a football team. And I feel like this Missouri team is going to surprise a lot of people. I think there's a lot of people thinking they're going to be good, but there's going to be a lot of more people surprised by just how good the Missouri Tigers actually are in 2024. Tennessee took to the podium as well. Josh Heupel, look, exactly what we expect from him. He's going to praise that defense. And when you've got one of the best defenses in the country and arguably potentially one of the best defenses in the SEC, if not the best defense in the SEC, yeah, you're going to get up there and you're going to praise your defense first and foremost. And then he, you know, kind of talked about some other elements of the team as well. But I think the defensively for Tennessee, that is going to be their strength. That is going to be their strong point. They're going to win games this year because of their defense. Not to say that their offense is going to be bad, but I can see them being in a close game against a Florida or against a South Carolina or against a Missouri or an LSU, you know, those type teams. I could see them being in a close game there. And it's a turnover, it's a fumble, it's something like that late in the third quarter or mid-fourth quarter, something like that, that really kind of flips that game and changes the outcome of it in favor of Tennessee. So I really do think Tennessee's defense is going to be their strength this year, and it's going to be why they win a lot of games. If Tennessee does not win a lot of games, it's because this defense did not pan out and play the way we all thought it would, right? All the people that are telling you, oh, their defense is going to be legit, it's going to be really good, it's going to be one of the best in the country, could be the best in the SEC. If they don't live up to that hype, then Tennessee's not going to win a lot of football games. They're still going to win games. They're still going to get to a bowl game. But, you know, right now with that defense, if that defense performs, 10-2 does not surprise me one bit. 9-3, 10-2 would not surprise me one bit for Tennessee if this defense plays up to the level that everybody expects them to, because that's how good you expect this defense to be. So no surprise there that Josh Heupel's first thing he addresses at the podium was the defensive, especially a defensive front seven. That is just that's an NFL defensive front seven. If you look at them on paper, the size of them, the physicality of them, good luck to anybody that's got to play them throughout this season. Kirby Smart also took to the podium yesterday after he was done gushing over Nick Saban, because, you know, now he doesn't have to play against Nick Saban, so they're back to being buddies. But he mentioned something I talked about yesterday on the show that I kind of wanted to hear him address, and that was the issues with the driving with the team there in Athens. Lots of players getting involved with different types of traffic incidents and speeding and all those types of violations. Kirby Smart said something that we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about, because I'm not sure I like it. I don't know. He said that the collective, like the NIL collective for the University of Georgia, has actually been fining players who go through these traffic violations. And the reason I don't like it is because I feel like this should be a university thing, right? I have no problem with finding these players. Now that they're making the money that they're making through NIL, I have no problem finding them. But I think this should be a final decision that's come down through the university, not the collective. Because we've seen before, the collective doesn't always make the best decisions compared to the university. I mean, Jaden Rashada, who ironically enough is now part of the University of Georgia football team, is still actively has a lawsuit against the University of Florida, Billy Napier, and their NIL or their former NIL collective. Because the NIL made some promises that, you know, they couldn't necessarily keep up with. We haven't gotten to a point with these collectives and these NILs that we feel comfortable enough to go, all right, yeah, let them handle that stuff. At least I haven't. You may be good with it. You may be comfortable with it. Now, that's fine. That's fine. More difference of opinions is absolutely welcome. But for me, I'm not a fan of the collective being the one that's in charge of finding these players. I understand that's kind of where the money's coming from. It's funneling through them, then to the players. But these players that are getting in trouble for these traffic violations at Georgia, being fined by the collective, I feel like that's more so something that we should let that final ruling go to the university, and then the university can work with the collective through that process. So we're still early on with all this collective and NIL stuff. Who knows what's going to change from here on out. But all I know is that when I heard Kirby Smart say that, I was like, oh, really? The collective has been fining them. Not the university, not the SEC, the collective. Do we trust the collective enough? Right? I guess they do in Athens. I don't know. They probably have a better one than some of these other ones that you hear about. But I'm not necessarily a fan of that. Otherwise, Kirby Smart on the podium was exactly what you expected. He spent more time praising things like Jordan-Hare Stadium and stuff like that. Because the guy knows he's got the best team in the conference. He's got one of the best teams in the country, right? He's got Carson Beck back as his quarterback. There's nothing he's worrying about. He doesn't have to get up there and defend his stature as a head coach like Billy Napier at Florida, which we'll talk about because he's coming up today. He doesn't have to defend being new into the conference like a Brent Venables or a Steve Sarkisian or even a guy like Kalen DeBoer, who's coming over and taking over the Alabama job. He didn't have to defend himself and tell people why they're going to succeed. Kirby Smart's just got to show up, stand in front of a camera, answer a couple of questions, do radio room, and then get back on the plane and fly back to Athens. So, not a lot of fluff from him outside of that news about the collective, which, again, I'm not necessarily comfortable with the collective finding players. But that's just me. That's just me. Looking ahead to day three today in Dallas for SEC Media Days. Like I said, Kalen DeBoer is going to be the first on the podium. He's, of course, going to be taking over that job from the University of Alabama. And I think the biggest thing with him, the biggest thing with Kalen DeBoer and what I'm really kind of looking forward to hear from him is addressing the expectations. Obviously, when you're taking over from a guy like Nick Saban, there's going to be a lot of people that think that maybe you are not suited to fill those shoes. And I've heard Alabama fans say, oh, I don't like this new hire. He's bringing in DJs to team meetings, and he's just changing the culture that Nick Saban had there, and it was a winning culture, and you shouldn't mess with the culture if it's a winning culture, and hush. He won at Washington with this same culture he's bringing into Tuscaloosa, all right? If he won in Washington, he can win in Tuscaloosa. I think there's a lot of people who are going to be eating some crow by the time this season is over because they're going to be pleasantly surprised with the job that Kalen DeBoer does. But I want to hear from him as far as how he's managing those expectations, right? Also, you know, that transition, we talked several times with a lot of these different teams and players and coaches about transitioning into something new, and that's what he's coming from. I mean, he's coming from the Pac-12 at Washington. He's coming into the SEC now. I mean, it's a different animal, you know. Going back to that mentioned Eric Taylor in Friday Night Lights a moment ago, the TV show. I mean, you watch that show, you see the pressure that he's under. If they lose a game, there's for sale signs put out on his front yard, right? That's the way it is in the SEC. Listening to the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, he was talking with somebody, and they were talking about how there's – There's 16 teams now in the SEC, and about 8 or 9 of those fan bases expect a national championship. Well, only one team can win a national championship. And if those fan bases aren't part of that one team that wins that national championship, they're going to start murmuring and talking about, are you the guy to get the job done? So maybe that leash he had at Washington, that lenience he had in Washington, where maybe he could lose a game and still be kind of in the good grace of the fan base. Let me tell you something. You lose a couple of games this year, especially if it's to a team that maybe you feel like you should beat. That fan base in Tuscaloosa is going to let you know they are not happy with you. I don't know if they're going to go as far as for sale signs on your front lawn, but they will definitely be calling into sports talk radio shows, and they will definitely be calling into Paul Feinbaum and letting you know that they are not happy with you. And some of these coaches, they got egos. They listen to those shows, right? They want to hear what's being said about them, and they'll hear every word of it. So I'm interested from Kalen DeBoer, how is he handling that transition into this role at Alabama as the head coach and taking over for a guy who has a statue right outside the stadium? That's not easy, right? And it can't be comfortable, right? That's a lot of pressure. The guy was, they built a statue for him before he was even done coaching. Heck, they're liable to build another one of him somewhere else on campus or in Tuscaloosa now that he's retired. So that's a lot of pressure on Kalen DeBoer as the head coach of the Crimson Tide now. How does he adjust moving from the Pac-12 to the SEC, but also how is he handling those expectations, filling in those shoes left over from Nick Saban? Certainly seems to me, and we'll have to hear what he says on this, but it seems like to me, he's not trying to fill in the shoes. He's just trying to start a whole new pair of shoes, right? He's just trying to put his feet in a whole new pair of shoes and not even worry about what Nick Saban's doing. Because, again, like I said, he's doing things that Nick Saban didn't do. He's bringing in DJs into team meetings. He's playing music at practices. He's, you know, it's a little bit more loose and relaxed environment than what Nick Saban had. Does that make it any better or wrong? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's just different. And the only way to see it pay off is by the product they'll put on the field coming up in about a month and a half, August 31st, when we get this thing kicked off. So that's what I'm expecting to hear from Kalen DeBoer when he takes the podium later on today. Jeff Leiby from Mississippi State, he's taking over his first head coaching job there in Starkville. First-time head coach, and there's some people that expect him to actually do a pretty good job there in Mississippi State, including his old former boss, Brent Venables, because Coach Leiby spent the last year or so in Oklahoma with Brent Venables as not only offensive coordinator, but quarterbacks coach as well. So, and before that, he was actually with Ole Miss. So he's got some experience. He's got some skin in the game when it comes to the SEC, much like Brent Venables was saying. But Brent actually touched on that during his SEC media comments. He said, you know, I think he's going to do a really good job at Mississippi State. And here's the thing. With Mississippi State, you don't have to. I talked about 16 teams in the SEC, 8 or 9 of those fan bases expect you to win a national championship every year. Mississippi State is not one of them. They are not one of them. If you win eight games even, that's a successful year to a lot of Mississippi State fans. A lot of Mississippi State fans are happy with 8-4, 9-3, and going to the Outback Bowl or whatever it's called now. Is it still the Outback Bowl? I don't know. You know what I'm talking about. So that's the expectations in Starkville. And I think it's perfect for a first-time head coach. Because you look at some of these coaches that I felt like could have been great head coaches in college football, but they go to the wrong teams with the wrong fan bases. Will Muschamp is definitely one of them. To have your first head coaching job be the University of Florida, coming off of Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow. Talk about the pressure Kalen DeBoer's got at Bama coming off of Nick Saban. Imagine being the guy taking over the head coaching role after Urban Meyer and Tim Tebow did what they did there in Gainesville. I don't think that was conducive for Will Muschamp to have as his first head coaching job. And I think there were some mistakes there, and that kind of put him behind the eight ball, and he was never really able to get it going in the right direction, despite an actually a pretty good year, too, where they went, I think they went 10-2 in that year, lost to Louisville in the Sugar Bowl. But then those next couple of seasons, man, you had a 4-8 season, and then you just could not get it done. Ended up getting fired. So I think for a guy like Jeff Leiby, who's making his head coach debut, Starkville is the best place for him to do that because there's not a lot of expectations. And honestly, this program is not, I don't want to say that they've lost some swagger, because I think that's kind of a disrespectful way of saying it. So I don't want to say it that way. I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. They lost something when Mike Leach passed away. The momentum, the excitement that Mike Leach was building and that he had inside that program there in Starkville, they lost it when he passed away. And they have not been able to get it back since. They have just not been that excited about football. And look, rightfully so. If your active head coach passes away unexpectedly and suddenly, that's going to mess with you, man. Especially in the SEC, because if you are endeared to your coach of your team in the SEC and they pass away, I mean, you remember, go on YouTube. All right, if you're younger, go on YouTube and look up video of Bear Bryant's funeral and see how many people lined the streets and lined overpasses for his funeral procession as it passed by. That's how SEC fans feel about their head coaches. So when Mike Leach passes away, that definitely changed the outlook of that program. That program is at a very low place right now. So I think for Jeff Leiby coming in, taking over this program, I think it's the perfect opportunity for him as a head coach for his first job. He's going to continue to be able to take what's there, build off of it, grow it. And the great thing is, because Mississippi State's fan base is not that fan base that expects him to be winning and competing for national championships every year, he's going to have plenty of time to do it. As long as there are positive signs and positive results on the field, he's going to get plenty of time to do it. So I think he is in a very good situation there, taking over the head coaching job at Mississippi State. Billy Napier going to be heading to the podium around, I think, 1 o'clock this afternoon. Lots to talk about with Billy. Billy Boy is going to be busy answering questions almost all afternoon. I think probably from the start of his press conference to the time they have to usher him off the stage because he's ran out of time, there are going to be hands up in that room asking questions. For the most part, expectations of year three, this is that year, right? There's no more Dan Mullen players. There's no more excuses. You've got your guys. You've got your team in place. Majority of the guys that you have as starters are players that you recruited into the University of Florida. And the ones that aren't are guys that you went and got out of the transfer portal. This is your team. There is no more excuse for Billy Napier. He's got to have success this year. And that's got to be the expectation heading into year three. But also, he's one of the top coaches on the hot seat, right? Because there's a lot of Florida fans that just don't think he's the guy to get the job done. When he first took the job, there was a lot of excitement around him, right? A lot of Florida fans were excited about Billy Napier at the University of Florida because of, you know, the track record of, you know, the coaches he's worked under. He's part of that Nick Saban tree. Look at what he did at Louisiana when he was with the Raging Cajuns. And now, you know, he takes over this job in Gainesville, and you're like, well, if he can do it at Louisiana, think about what he can do with all the resources we have here in Gainesville. And it just hasn't panned out to this point the way that Florida fans thought it would. Lots of Florida fans are not happy with him as the head coach. Lots of people are looking at his record and the fact that the fan base is, and including boosters, are growing increasingly frustrated with him as the head coach at the University of Florida. You couple all that with the fact that they have a brutal back half of the schedule this upcoming season. Lots of people do expect Billy Napier to possibly be getting a pink slip at some point during the season, if not at the end of the season. And I think that there are ways that he can save that from happening. He's got to have an opportunity to prove that he is the guy for this job this season. And it's going to start week one when Miami comes to the Swamp, August 31st. And I've said it before on this show, and I will continue to say it until we get to that Friday on August 30th, and we're getting ready to talk about this game. I'll say it a couple more times. I firmly believe the head coach that loses that game between Miami and Florida will lose their job by the end of the season. I am more confident in that than anything else I will say on this show. The coach that loses that game will lose their job by the end of the season. And if it's Billy Napier, I'm even more confident about that statement because of that schedule that they have. Because if they don't start off with a strong record, if they're not going into that Georgia game 5-0, 5-1, whatever they would be, then they are going to be in some serious, serious trouble. Because that back half of the schedule is Georgia in Jacksonville, LSU, yes, that's a home game, Ole Miss, yes, that's a home game, but you also have, I believe, Missouri mixed in there, and then you also have Florida State to wind it out and close it out. That is not a fun schedule to play. Oh, and Texas in there as well, by the way, just in case it wasn't hard enough, let's put Texas on there. Now, granted, each of those teams, I can give you question marks for those teams. I mean, LSU, we don't really know what we're going to get from them. You know, how's Garrett Nussmeier going to be for the starting quarterback? You know, how's he going to refill those shoes that he has to fill? Can Brian Kelly kind of get this team focused and directed on the defensive side of the ball in year three? I mean, you could sit here and make question marks for just about any of those teams on the back schedule, but it doesn't change the fact that they're all top 10, top 15 teams that Florida has to play consecutive weeks in a row to close out the season. So Billy Napier's got a lot of questions he's going to have to answer today about not only expectations for year three, but being on the hot seat and how does he handle that schedule that they have, because it is going to be tough. We're going to close out day three of SEC Media Day. Steve Sarkisian going to be on the stage at the podium. And for this one, it's kind of like Kirby Smart. You know, he knows he's got one of the top teams in the SEC. He's probably going to get up there and give some coach speak. But I hope we hear him kind of talk about Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning and the situation there. Because I'm going to be completely honest with you. If you don't think Texas Longhorn fans aren't going to start calling for Arch Manning if Quinn Ewers has a bad start to the season, if he struggles to start this season off and starts a little slow, those fans are going to start talking on message boards, on social media. They're going to start talking about putting in Arch Manning. And it's only a matter of time that when that happens, it turns into that be happening in the stadium during games. Whether that's booing Quinn Ewers or booing Steve Sarkisian or whatever it may be. So he's got this very volatile situation that could potentially explode and create some kind of controversy. Right now, I don't think there's much of a controversy. But again, if Ewers starts slow this season, you better believe there's going to be a lot of people calling for Arch Manning to take over as the starting quarterback for the Texas Longhorns. Especially with everything that's on the line for them, right? I mean, they're expected to be right there with Georgia as competing for the top team in the SEC. Expected to be a college football playoff team. There's a lot on the line for the Longhorns this year. And if Quinn Ewers is struggling early on in the season, then you better believe there's going to be a lot of chatter for Arch Manning. So I'm very curious to see how that's handled and what he has to say about that as he hits the podium coming up later on this afternoon. And, of course, we'll recap day three of SEC Media Days on tomorrow's show, and we'll look ahead to day four as well, which will be the final day as we're getting ready to wrap it up in Dallas. Let's take a look at a couple more things before we go real quick. 2024 All-Star Game last night for Major League Baseball. American League wins that 5-3. Jarren Duran named the MVP for the American League team. His two-run home run was the go-ahead runs for the AL in that game, so congratulations to him. Taking home a nice vehicle there. That's always the cool thing. I know everybody wants to talk about, oh, yeah, he took home the trophy. Well, yeah, he also gets a very nice car, too. So that's a part of it. One thing that did come away from that game that I noticed, not only I wasn't a fan of, but clearly anybody on social media wasn't a fan of, the hideous uniforms. I mean, those things were ugly, right? Capital U-G-L-Y, ugly. Thankfully, this morning, Major League Baseball has announced that they are actually going to reconsider returning to individual team uniforms, meaning if you play for the Tampa Bay Rays, you get to wear your Tampa Bay Ray uniform. If you play for the Yankees, you wear the Yankee uniform, et cetera, which is what I think it should be. It's fun, right, to see everybody representing their own team as an all-star instead of wearing these weird uniforms like we had last night. I will say I don't mind the hats for the National League. The hats were kind of cool for the National League team. But the uniforms, the jerseys, the pants, the socks, all that stuff was a little ridiculous. And the American League just, I mean, to me, the American League just looked like some kind of weird video game smash-up version of the San Francisco 49ers, right? Just all that gold and red was just, it was a lot. So I'm all for, please do, please, Major League Baseball, go back to letting these players wear their individual uniforms for whatever team they play for. Please. No more eyesores like last night. Some sad news to close out the show today. Joe Bryant, also known as Jelly Bean Bryant, is the dad of Kobe Bryant. He had a stroke and passed away at the age of 61. So we send our thoughts and prayers out to the Bryant family. And wish them nothing but the best during this tough time. It's always tough when something like this happens suddenly and you don't really expect it. And now this is something that within the last decade they've had to deal with something sudden like this happening to their family twice now. So hopefully they find the solace in the fact that he's now with Kobe and Gigi and not feeling any kind of pain or anything like that. So again, just want to send our thoughts and prayers out to the Bryant family at this time. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great Wednesday. Hey, we are halfway through the week, which means we're a little bit more closer to college football season in the NFL. It's right around the corner. It'll be here before you know it. And, of course, we'll talk all of the action when it does come right here on the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. I'll talk to you tomorrow.